Hey there, welcome back to Posting Through It. I'm your host, Jared Holt. This is a bi-weekly podcast released every other Monday. Each week, I bring on a guest who is doing groundbreaking work on this front. We talk for about half an hour and unpack the latest badness that plagues our condition. You can find the episode archive at postingthroughit.com. While you're there, consider subscribing for $5 a month to help keep this thing going, get the bills paid, that sort of thing. There's also a newsletter there you can sign up for. That goes out in between episodes. In recent weeks, particularly since the FBI searched Mar-a-Lago, former President Trump has used his platform on his alternative social media platform, Truth Social, to plug QAnon stuff. I'm not talking random posts from accounts that just so happen to also promote QAnon drivel. I mean full-fledged QBrain accounts that make no bones about their belief in the nonsensical conspiracy theory. Should you need a reminder, QAnon is a conspiracy theory that supposes that Donald Trump is at war with a cabal of deep state, Hollywood, Democratic Party, and otherwise liberal forces in society that allegedly engage in the satanic sacrifice and abuse of children. Any day, the theory supposes, Trump will unleash the storm, rounding up all the supposed bad guys and executing them in front of the public. That sounds crazy. It's because it is. Joining me this week is author Mike Rothschild. He's written a book called The Storm Is Upon Us, How QAnon Became a Movement, Cult, and Conspiracy Theory of Everything. It's a go-to read on the QAnon conspiracy movement that Trump is now promoting beyond a shadow of a doubt. Mike and I are going to talk about what it means that Trump is promoting this content in the following interview. We're going to take a quick musical break, and I'll be back with Mike. On the show with me now is Mike Rothschild. He's been on the show before. We love Mike here. What's up?
How you doing? Thanks for having me back. It's feels like it's been a while, but also feels like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I know. It has been a while. What have you been up to lately?
People have just decided to stop believing everything they read on the internet, and I just, you know, sit around moving spoons around. No, I've been busy. I've been promoting the QAnon book. I'm working on another book about the Rothschild banking dynasty and the conspiracy theories about them. Doing some writing, doing some expert witness stuff, and just trying to make sense of this conspiracy moment that we're in right now.
So you're an expert, you might say, one might say. On conspiracy theories, particularly QAnon. You're part of what I consider like the OG gang of us that back in like 2018 were trying to ring the alarm bells about this. So I'm really happy to have you on to talk about what is not so happy of a topic, which is Trump posting QAnon stuff on his Truth Social account. That's been getting a lot of play, making a lot of headlines lately. I wrote a column for the Daily Beast about it after they asked me to. So tell us, how bad is it? I mean, like, certainly there's all the headlines from the fake news and the Mockingbird media and whatnot, but what is he posting? How explicit is it? What's your take?
Yeah, so it's really bad. It's Trump is using Truth Social to post basically an endless fire hose of conspiracy stuff, and most of it has some link to QAnon. You know, he'll be posting memes of him with a Q lapel pin or with a QAnon catchphrase. There was a short period where he had I can't bring myself to say retruthed. So he'd shared a response to a post that had included a Q drop, and it looked like he'd shared a Q drop. And then what it was that Truth Social's user interface is really, really bad, and it's hard to read. So it looked like he was sharing a Q drop, but he was actually just sharing a response to one. But even that was just a sort of the closest he's ever come to actually acknowledging not just that Q people love him, but the actual tenets of QAnon, the drops and the mythology and all that crap. So it has been really kind of nonstop. He will go on these binges where he will share dozens of posts that have some link to Q in the span of an hour or two.
Trump's sharing Q stuff isn't particularly new. I remember when he was on Twitter and I was writing about Q more frequently at the time, he would kind of do this. He would retweet accounts and you would click through them and lo and behold, it's a QAnon supporter. And he did this over and over and over again. How is what he's doing on Truth Social different from that?
It's different in that there's more of it and it's much more blatant. With a lot of the Q stuff he retweeted at the beginning, you had to do a little bit of digging to figure out that it was actually from a Q person. You know, they would post some meme or some compliment to Trump, and then something else they tweeted would have something to do with Q. So you could plausibly say, well, he doesn't know that this is about Q. He's just sharing something that he likes, and he always does that. With this stuff, he is sharing Q iconographies, sharing Q images, Q hashtags, Q ideas. There's no way that he doesn't know what this is, or the people around him don't know what this is.
So something that has struck me about what Trump has been promoting, and we can talk about this in more detail a little bit later. It's kind of a lot of it kind of harkens back to what I think of as like Generation One QAnon. Like when the Q drops were at the center, it was all about the logos and the catchphrases and whatnot. In the last year or so, one might even argue the last couple of years, the Q community has kind of moved on to incorporate other things into their mythology, or you know, new focus areas like election denialism and your what is now unfortunately kind of run-of-the-mill conspiracy theories. I'm curious if you had any thoughts on that, if you kind of got the same impression, or maybe I'm wrong, and if I am, you should definitely tell me so.
No, you're not wrong. They really, you know, after January 6th and after Biden was inaugurated, Q really couldn't be the same as it was before, because this was a movement that revolved around President Trump going on Twitter and announcing that the storm is upon us and all the bad people are going to be arrested. Well, he wasn't the president anymore and he couldn't use Twitter anymore. So a lot of the things that Q had been built around were no longer valid. These were things that just weren't possible. But the people who were believers in this, and of course the people who turned this into their careers, they couldn't just leave it behind. They had to adapt it. And so what became a much more generalized conspiracy theory movement emerged. It was about the election being stolen. It was about COVID being a hoax. It was about the vaccine killing everybody who took it. It was about, you know, cancel culture and border security and all the, you know, trans issues and all the culture war stuff, a lot of which Q never talked about, but were believed by the same people who believed that Q was this omniscient guru. So it's a very adaptable movement. It's a movement that can enmesh itself into a lot of different things and bring them all together under a general umbrella of conspiracy and distrust.
And it's because of that, that QAnon communities, I always try to make the differentiator between Q as like Q posts and that sort of original sort of iteration of the community that hyper-focused on the drops and decoding them, following the breadcrumbs, whatever, and sort of what exists today, which is that a lot of the communities that formed online remain intact. Some have moved to alternative platforms. You still have some people who hawk QAnon shit like on mainstream platforms, but you know, they're not posting where we go one, we go all, and their slogans and stuff all the time, but they have still been there. And on Truth Social, they've been an integral part of the business strategy. Alex Kaplan at Media Matters has done a lot of really great research exposing that and showing them in their own words, explaining that people like Kash Patel saying as much. So that Q community still existed. How have they been reacting to Trump sharing this more explicit Q material?
They are ecstatic. They love it. This is their champion, their messiah. And he is pointing at them and saying, hey, we're still in this. We're still going to win. I've got your back. We've just had a few setbacks, but, you know, never in doubt. I still love you. So they're looking at all of this as acknowledgement, but they're also really happy that the media has to talk about it. And one of the things that I'm constantly pushing back on is this idea that Trump is the former guy. You know, he's, oh, he doesn't matter anymore. He's the leader of the Republican Party. He is the de facto nominee for 2024, unless he doesn't run. What he says and what he does and what he shares are really important, even if they're ridiculous, even if they're completely insane. And so when the, you know, when the ex-president and still leader of the party is sharing him with his head on a Rambo body with a flaming Q in the background or whatever it is, we have to talk about it. And of course, the Q community loves it because, oh, he's trolling the media. He's in control. It's this sort of self-perpetuating cycle where we have to cover this ridiculous crap because of who is saying it.
Yeah, definitely. Very meta reflection to have on this episode of the podcast. So I'll ask you the question that a lot of like reporters that have reached out to me in the last few weeks have asked me, which is, why do you think he's doing this? In my Daily Beast column, and I've argued to a lot of reporters that I don't see plausible deniability here anymore. As you mentioned before on Twitter, it was sometimes a bit more ambiguous, right? Trump would retweet an account, and if you went poking around, it had ties to QAnon or espoused QAnon. Whereas here, it's like the Q stuff is like right there. It's in the username of some of these posts. And you add to that the way Truth Social as a company has appealed to QAnon supporters, you know, their interactions with them. It's like implausible to me to think that he just doesn't know what he's doing. And I was talking to Alex Kaplan before I wrote that column, and, you know, sort of the pattern we both were picking up on was that it seems that Trump kind of seems to do this more whenever he's in trouble. And part of that reason may be as simple as Q people love him, say wonderful things about him, especially when he's in crisis mode. And maybe he just thinks, you know, who cares what these people believe? They're my people. I love them. I got to show them some love. Do you think there's any credence to that theory, or have you had any of your own thoughts about why Trump might be doing this?
Yeah, I'm trying not to overthink it and realize that this is somebody who has always basked in the adulation of his fans, and these are his biggest fans. And he is in trouble. You know, his back is against the wall in a lot of ways. The FBI search of Mar-a-Lago, the stuff going on with the Georgia phone call, he's in some real jeopardy. And when you're in jeopardy, you turn to the people who have always been there for you. And of course, with Trump, this is not his, you know, his kids or his friends, because he doesn't have friends. He has supporters and he has Q people, and his Q people still love him. And it doesn't matter what he's done or what trouble he's in. They'll love him no matter what. You know, him potentially being indicted will only make them love him more. He will only be more of a hero to them and more of a victim of the bought and paid for Department of Justice and all that. So I certainly think that there are aspects of it that are very troubling, that speak to the potential for violence and things like that. But ultimately, this is just a narcissist going to the people who love him for more adoration.
So all of this is happening in the backdrop of the midterms, which are very rapidly approaching. We're doing a lot of election work at ISD at my day job. Mm-hmm. And trust me, these things are like a freight train, and I'm like glued to the tracks them come towards us. The Q community, as we were kind of talking about earlier, or I guess maybe I was asserting earlier, hasn't really gone away. A lot of parts of the QAnon community started picking up different pieces of the conspiracy pie that sort of fit the worldview, but weren't really Q related. One of those was election denialism. And it seems like more and more and more visible ways, whether it's through influencers like Juan07, I forget his real name.
Wayne Wilmot. Yeah. Not,
thank you.
Not the first guy you'd look to for the name Juan, you know?
between Truth of Vote, election denialism, activism group that's been active for a while. It seems like QAnon supporters, and Tor says, we have to talk about Tor, but have been trying to get involved in elections, whether that is running for office themselves or candidates appealing at some point in the campaign to that constituency, chattering about poll watching, about poll working. How have you seen the QAnon community kind of react to midterms or get ready to midterms? Certainly not the whole thing is like, you know, the whole movement is not like hyper-focused on elections 100% of the time. But there are big parts that have been really focused on the elections. I'm curious what you've seen.
Yeah, it's a lot of different things. And the first is that they're still sticking to the fix 2020 idea. You know, this is an industry. This is a vocation for some of these people. You know, you look at people like Dinesh D'Souza, who have made a huge amount of money off election denial. They're not going to just give up and say, well, I guess, you know, it's been a long time. Biden's the president. We're going to be done with that. They still think it was stolen. They're still suing. They're still looking for audits. But what they're also doing is they're trying to get inside the machinery of elections themselves. And they're running for office. And you've got, you know, very out and proud QAnon believers, election deniers, anti-vaxxers running for office. And it's not just the kind of perennial candidate who runs every 2 years and gets, you know, 0.2% of the vote. These are, you know, these are people who've won primaries. They are in position to win general elections, and they're running for Secretary of State. They're running for governor. These aren't just, you know, doomed presidential runs to make money. They're trying to get inside the election infrastructure and blow it up and deputize themselves to pick the winners of elections based on conspiracy theories that have no basis in reality. So it's terrifying in a lot of ways. It is an attempt to subvert how democracy functions. And it's one of those things that you can get so lost in what Trump is doing that you're missing what all of the other people are doing.
Speaking of getting involved in elections, I mentioned that group, True the Vote. I feel like I keep saying Alex Kaplan's name, but he really has been doing some excellent research on this front, especially as of late.
Yeah.
True the Vote, it's a longtime standing organization that has made its bread and butter contesting elections or trying to sow doubt around them. They have certainly, it appears to be, quite a bit of money and support behind them. The film that Dinesh D'Souza put out, 2,000 Mules, which is a huge hit among election deniers, was sort of co-produced or at the very least heavily relied on True the Vote material for the basis of that film. That group has been interfacing quite directly, I mean, incredibly directly, with QAnon supporters, people we know support QAnon. And I'm curious, like, that's sort of just one element of what you were talking about. I'm curious if you have any reflections on sort of what it means when people from the movement are getting involved with organizations that have been able to accumulate a certain degree of niche clout and power within those spaces that are at the front lines of trying to assault the democratic process and the integrity of elections.
Yeah, it's a legitimizing of these movements. It is taking this griping about elections and professionalizing it in a way and using it not for personal gain, although they are certainly gaining personally, but to use it for electoral purposes. You know, an election denial organization really doesn't have any business funding candidates for an election. But everything is enmeshed together. Everything is now one buffet of conspiracy theories and grift. So they're looking at getting inside elections and using organizations like True the Vote, using the resources it has, using the connections it has, using the social media clout that it has for their own purposes, but also for the general purpose of undermining our faith in democratic elections. They're looking at saying, if a Democrat wins, we're not going to certify this. We're going to do everything we can to undercut us not winning. And this goes back to the very beginning of the 2020 cycle. Trump was saying right from the beginning, if I lose, it's because the election was stolen. Well, there's a lot of people who took that to heart and are interpreting it their own way to get inside how our elections work. And I don't know that a lot of people are really quite understanding how much is going on at very low levels to make sure that this is repeated over and over throughout the country.
And not only just what's going on, but how little defense at that local and sometimes even state level really exists to push back on this stuff, which is why my next question for you is, do you have any ideas? Can you solve this for us, Mike? You'll get a Nobel Prize if you do.
No pressure. You know, the thing that to me helps defeat these kinds of schemes is shedding light on them, is pushing back on them openly, letting people know that these people are not just clowns. They're not just grifters. They're not just social media trolls. I mean, somebody like Juan O'Savin looks like an idiot and sounds crazy, but we can't
just... To be clear, my opinion is that he is, but...
Yes, absolutely.
They are clowns and they are crazy.
They are clowns and they are idiots and they are crazy, but that doesn't mean that they're ineffective. People are drawn to that. People are drawing to, let's blow up democracy to own the libs. And you fight that not by calling it stupid, but by showing you how serious it is. I mean, yes, it's stupid, but it's also really effective and it really works. So understanding what these people are doing, how they operate, the tools they use and the sham lawsuits and the audits and the conspiracy theories and the trolling, when you understand how it works, you suddenly aren't so afraid of it. And you go, okay, here's what I need to do. I need to vote. I need to make sure everybody around me is going to vote. I need to see this for what it is, and as an organized plan to subvert democracy, and not just people getting up at a town hall meeting and yelling about kids in litter boxes or the vaccine killing you. This is an organized plot, and we need to see it for what it is.
Something I've always appreciated about you and your approach to this work is I feel like you come at it from a very sort of compassionate angle, right? It's you've focused a lot of your criticism on influencers, not the people that get caught up in this stuff. And I'm curious if, you know, especially since the time that you published your book and today, as QAnon has changed, when you're thinking generally, like I suspect that many fewer listeners will have chances to interact with the sort of ringleaders of the Q movement, you know, more than they would have a chance to interact with like a loved one who is maybe swept up in this stuff. I'm curious if, you know, the way that things have changed in the last couple of years and now this sort of forward push into our election system, if you have that same approach or if you've had any thoughts that have developed as the situation has.
Yeah, I'm trying to retain that approach. I'm trying to focus my, not only my efforts, but my kind of anger and my frustration on the influencers, on the grifters at the very top, on the people who are making the films and, you know, selling the books and putting out things to followings of hundreds of thousands of people. And I'm trying to understand and continue to understand that people get sucked into movements like this for a reason. I think there were a lot of people who looked at Trump's loss and said, "There, how could that have happened? Joe Biden is a husk. He was hidden in his basement. He can barely finish a sentence. How could he beat Trump? That makes no sense. Something had to have happened." And understand that that's a very normal human reaction to an unexpected event. It's the people who are then telling the people who are having that reaction that there was a conspiracy, that there was a plot, and hey, give me some money and I'll tell you more about it. That's the problem. The people who believe the conspiracy are not as much of the problem as the people who are pushing it and monetizing it.
Another thing that I've appreciated about your work is that although it has focused heavily on, you know, QAnon and right-leaning conspiracy theories in the same way that my focus has looked right for most of its career, because it's just, you know, the way I see it, it's just a matter of triage, right? Not because I'm some raving partisan who, you know, licks the heels of Joe Biden or anything, but just because as far as institutional buy-in and prevalence, I mean, there's like, there are certainly loads of like left-wing conspiracy theories, but Joe Biden is not like reposting them on like, come on social or that's a terrible joke, but
couldn't care less about that.
Right. So it's just like a bit different, but I did want, in the interest of balance and with the careful caveat that I really don't mean to equivocate these things at all, but generally speaking, across the landscape, it seems to me at least that I get the sense that like conspiratorial thinking, whether it's about things like the war in Ukraine or you know various financial instruments that are being used to try to combat inflation or COVID or healthcare or gender affirming care for transgender people, like it just seems like conspiracies are a whole lot more pronounced now. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts, you know, since you wrote the book or even just in the last year or whatever, do you get the same sense that conspiracy brain, if you will, is absorbing more market share in our discourse? Or maybe I just spend too much time on Twitter and like see the worst of it, right?
Well, I mean, being on Twitter is the worst of it, but it is. I mean, we really are at a point where everybody has more access to conspiracy theories and to spreading them and to creating them in a number of ways. And I mean, certainly there is not an equivalence between right-wing conspiracy theories and left-wing. I mean, the right-wing conspiracy theories are like calling in bomb threats to children's hospitals and, you know, breaching the Capitol. I mean, that there's no left-wing equivalent of that. But the left-wing conspiracy theories are constantly frustrating to me because it is, they cast Trump as this kind of supervillain who will do anything to get ahead. And they cast the people around him as these kind of evil geniuses. And there's a kind of a concerted effort to not embrace common sense and to embrace complicated explanations rather than simple ones. I mean, I can give you an example that's just driving me crazy over the last couple of months.
Let's hear it.
Absolutely. The conspiracy theories about Ivana Trump's death. You know, here was, you know, she was 78 or something, and she fell down a flight of stairs and was injured and she died. And there were immediately conspiracy theories from people who, you know, major resistance accounts who thought, oh, well, the Trumps bumped her off because they had a deposition the next day. It's identical to stuff I saw with QAnon about the death of George H.W. Bush, that he was killed to prevent a hearing about the Clinton Foundation that just ended up happening a week later. You know, just stuff that just has no tethering to reality. But because we see Trump as this supervillain, we think, well, he's capable of anything. And so now it's, oh, he had her cremated, so the casket could be full of classified documents that he buried so that the FBI wouldn't get them. And there's like tweets about this that get thousands and thousands of retweets. And you push back on it even a little bit. And then you get, well, you're saying that both sides do it equally. No, I'm not saying both sides do it equally. I'm saying that maybe we shouldn't do it. You right. know, like, just don't spread conspiracy theories.
Right.
Just
don't do that. It's that same understanding of the world through the lens of like an action movie. Right.
Right.
And like cremating Ivana Trump and stuffing a casket with classified documents. I've been watching a lot of The Blacklist on Netflix. That's like,
that's
like a Raymond Reddington plot, right?
It's something you'd see out of like Diamonds Are Forever. You know, I mean, this is just not the way anybody does anything, you know?
It's ridiculous. Anyway, well, Mike, we're running up on time here. Please sure. plug your book. It's as relevant today sure. as it is when you released it, which is a very sad thing to say, but it's good for you, I'm sure.
You know, I like to say recently that it's good for me and bad for the country.
Yeah, I get the same feeling about my work. Like, I get more visibility and attention on my work when terrible, terrible things happen. And
right.
it often leaves me feeling very conflicted. And mostly I just wish that people had listened sooner before the bad thing happened. But right. it's
And I figure this stuff is happening. You know, it's all out there. It would be taking place no matter what. And it really does require people to be paying attention to it and understanding it. And segue time. I do try to make you understand it in my book about QAnon, The Storm is Upon Us. You can pick it up in hardcover, ebook, audiobook, paperback, anywhere fine books are sold. You can find me on Twitter at RothschildMD, and I'm working on my next book, and that should be out, I'm hoping, end of 2023, and I'll, you know, I'm sure things will be even more terrible then.
Butter smooth. I'll also make sure that there's a link to Mike's book down in the description of this episode. Go check it out. It's good stuff. So, Mike, since you were on the podcast last, I have rebranded. The show is called Posting Through It now, and I haven't done enough episodes to where I can stop saying that yet, but but, you know, even as some things, mostly branding, have changed, the last question still remains. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
Oh, man, that's such a great question. I love talking about positive things. So I've been watching the new Star Wars series, Andor, and it is terrific. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed is fans of the whole kind of Star Wars TV milieu pointing out on Twitter some of the Easter eggs in the show, some of the connections to other shows, because I'm not like a Star Wars super fan. Like I haven't seen any of the animated shows, and I think I watched the last movie once. I really appreciate people who are really into this pointing this out and really enthusiastically talking about this show. It's really cool when people rally around something because it's good and they like it, rather than it's bad and you should waste your time hate watching it. So I guess that's my favorite thing on the internet right now. It's just generally the reaction to Andor and the people pointing out the really cool hidden stuff in it.
Mike Rothschild, thanks so much for joining the show this week. Talk to you soon.